Content note, Veronica Mars contains heavy themes, and this episode includes storylines concerning violence, murder, and mental health.
A long time ago on Veronica Mars.
Veronica tracks down Abel Koontz's daughter and hides her in a motel.
Veronica also grudgingly takes on the case of uppity student Sabrina, who is being harassed to the detriment of her midterms.
Jake and Celeste Kane did some covering up on the night of Lily's death with the help of Clarence Weedman,
who is all over the place, spooking everybody in this episode, keeping it subtle and undercover by wearing a very noticeable hat.
And there's another PI in town, Vinny Van Lowe.
Hooray.
He has a fake mustache and no morals.
Singing Hall & Oates songs into a pen, I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And turning up at your house at 11 p.m. ready to party, I'm Helen Zaltzman. I'm never ready to party.
You're listening to Veronica Mars Investigation Season 1, Episode 17.
Cains and Abels.
Helen, before we get into this episode, I have to bring up a piece of slightly older business.
Ooh.
It's been brought to my attention via Twitter that we failed to explain to our loyal listeners what Star 69 is or was. Did you actually have Star 69 in the UK?
No, we dialed 1471. I don't know if that's still a thing, but I understand what Star 69 is because I'm used to having to deduce what American things were in a pre-Google time.
Right.
That's the thing where you dial that in order to find the number that just called you, correct?
Yes.
Is there anything else that we failed to explain that we've been availed of by Twitter? I think we failed to explain that we like this show because a lot of people are like, do you hate this show? No, we wouldn't sacrifice so much of our lives to dissecting it if we hated it.
Oh my God. We're just having a laugh.
A critical conversation.
Yes, a critical conversation. A very good time. We certainly wouldn't be making this podcast if we didn't enjoy the show. But so sorry for any confusion that we may have given you.
Yeah. People listen to the pilot. We think we don't like the pilot. The pilot is an amazing episode of television.
Yes.
Fucked it, Jenny. Shame on me.
Okay, so sorry to delay our entry here, shall we?
Here we are, at the Mars home.
Yes.
Looking at the website of the Neptune Register.
And that's the local paper?
I'm going to assume.
And what does it say, Helen?
It's the Neptune Register obituary for Stella Koontz, Abel Koontz's mother. And Veronica voiceovers that Abel Koontz has a daughter, as we found out at the end of last episode. And now Clarence Weedman knows that Veronica knows.
Oh my God.
So then Veronica searches for Abel Koontz's daughter, Amelia DeLongpre, and so convenient, she's at college in Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount.
What are the odds?
What if she'd been at college in like Michigan and Veronica was like, okay, I'll jump in the car and I can be there in 3 hours because of Neptune's teleport roads that it's got.
There's an underpublicized sort of a wormhole in Neptune. That sort of just leads wherever with minimal commute.
It goes from the dog beach to wherever you want.
Yeah.
And then some very pacey music kicks in. It reminded me of the beginning of episode 9 when Veronica goes to see Abel Koontz in prison and then she's crying in her car after he's like, Veronica Mars, do you really think of a daughter to the schlubby P.I. Keith Mars? And then she does her crying and then she does some very busy detective work for a few minutes. And I was too lazy, I'm afraid, to go back to episode 9 to see if they use the same busy detective music. But I enjoy it. It does make me feel like excited for what's ahead. And off she runs to Loyola Marymount, to a dorm which has a beautiful in shape window, but all the panes are opaque brown.
Why is it like this?
Well, I do think there are better ways to shoot in studios than just making all windows opaque, which this show loves to do.
Well, I guess on a budget.
Just draw the curtains. Easy solution. And Amelia DeLongpre's roommate is studying on the bed. And Clarence Weedman turns up. And what better way to not attract notice when you are much older than the average undergrad age and striding through dorm corridors than to wear like a long overcoat and a 1940s spy-ish hat.
Dude.
And be shot from below in a very noirish way.
Yeah, and also, man, this guy really fills up a door frame, huh?
It's really well done to make him look intimidating and different to the Keith Mars style of detective. But know your place. If everyone's wearing sweatshirts and no hats, what kind of bullshit is this?
This is not a good undercover look. We can say that for sure.
Although maybe he doesn't need to be undercover. He just needs to be threatening, in which case it works pretty well.
Well, I just think this is what he wears every day, and he hasn't given it another thought. I think he's just fedora overcoat guy.
It's a hard look to pull off in Southern California. He must be sweating cobs under there.
Well, you know, in Southern California, when it's not summer, it's like winter in the morning, summer from like noon to 3 p.m., and then it like is fall for a couple hours, and it's winter again at night. So, and it's night.
Oh, nice.
I think it's dark out when he rolls up to the dorm. So there might be a chilly, chilly breeze coming in off the dog beach.
Okay, I'll allow it. I just don't imagine him in like polos and shorts in July. Unfortunate news for Clarence, though. The roommate says Amelia just left with a friend.
Could you describe this friend?
Tiny, blonde, cute as a bug.
Yeah, that's how I'm always describing the friend that my roommate just like went off to get coffee with. Like, what the hell? And of course, Clarence Weedman is like, tiny, blonde, and cute as a bug. There's only one person that could be.
Literally one. Also, presumably the roommate saw Veronica arriving 5 minutes ago, having to say to Amelia, oh, hi, I'm Veronica. You don't know me, but I've got information about that murder case that your dad was convicted for. Then you see Veronica and Amelia going not that quickly, low urgency, to Veronica's car.
Pick up the pace, pick up the pace.
Amelia, get in the car. If you don't get in the car, you're putting yourself in danger.
I haven't spoken to my father in years. I don't understand.
You're a threat to the Kane family now that you know about the payoff.
Payoff?
You just told me you're receiving millions in Kane software stock.
Mom said that was an out-of-court settlement.
It's not a settlement. It's a payoff. For pleading guilty to the murder of Lily Kane, your father is innocent.
That seems like A, a lot for Amelia to take in, and B, probably information that she would have had to say to get Amelia out of the building in the first place.
Yeah.
With a bag for her overnight stuff.
Yes, but we have limited time in this episode of television, Helen. We gotta go.
I get that.
So Veronica is tucking her away in a motel that I think is in Neptune. And Amelia says, well, this is fine. Exams are next week. One dank room is as good as the next. And I would like to object respectfully and say that no dank room is good. Therefore, how can one be as good as the next?
Right. Also, is this room dank? It has some very busy wallpaper. It's got shells on some walls because of the marine theme, and then floral sprigs on a pink background on another wall.
But it is called the Ocean Motel, so it might just be in a high humidity ocean adjacent zone.
Could well be a damp problem. Amelia de Longpre has very unconvincing hair. It's a beautiful colour, but it's been heavily curling tonged.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Which seems like low priority if you're revising for exams and stuff. And also if you are in hiding in a motel, you're like, no, I'm going to curl it right up to the scalp.
Right up to the scalp.
As someone with naturally curly hair, I call bullshit on this hair.
I respect you as an authority in this matter, Helen. I trust you.
Not an authority, but, you know, I've had 39 years of living with it.
Sounds like an authority to me.
So Veronica gives her a phone so that she can call her mum and get the Kane settlement doc sent over. And just to clarify, so Kane ostensibly were paying Abel Kuntz off because he invented the streaming video thing and then they romped to the Fortune 500 with it and he was cut out.
Right. That's the story that Amelia has been told.
Yeah. And Amelia is like, well, I'll need to be able to call my boyfriend as well, which is Chekhov's boyfriend call.
Chekhov's boyfriend reporting for duty.
Oh, what Chekhov hath spawned.
And then, oh dear. You know, morality can really be a slippery slope. And Veronica is on a muddy precipice. Not doing her best work. Amelia asks how Abel is. And Veronica, in her voiceover, is like, well, he's about to die. But if I tell you that, you're probably not going to help me. So instead, out loud, she says he's doing fine.
Do you think that Amelia wouldn't help her? Is it if she knows he's dying, she'll be like, well, what's the point of trying to get him exonerated? Because I think I'd be like, well, I want to clear my dad's name while there's still time.
Well, I think what's being posited is that if it's revealed that Abel Kuntz is being actually paid out for having confessed to the murder and then he is cleared, the payouts will go away. So I think the figure that's tossed around later is around $3 million. So $3 million for, as Keith puts it, 3 months of her father's life.
Right.
From whom she is estranged and so on.
Mm. I can't remember if this has been covered by the show, but I was just thinking, how did the Kanes or Clarence find someone to make a deal with to falsely confess to Lily's murder? Now, what did you do? Do you ask around your employees and enemies to find out who's got a terminal illness and could use the money and is willing to take the fall? How does it work?
Well, Abel was seeing the same doctor as the Kanes. So maybe Jake was like, hey, doc, any of my disgruntled former employees have any life-threatening?
And the doctor was like, well, that's against my professional code, but okay. Or maybe Duncan and Abel were in the waiting room and they were like, hey, what are you in for, buddy? Terminal cancer. Oh, I'm in for this mysterious epilepsy mental illness combo that apparently anything can happen with.
Anything at all.
But now what happens are the titles. And then we go to school and midterms are happening, which according to Veronica are an orgy of tension. Is that what midterms are like, Jenny?
I would really strongly hesitate, if not entirely avoid, using the word orgy in the same sentence as midterms. I don't even remember them being that big of a deal. But hey, it was a long time ago.
Maybe in Neptune, because you've got all these rich kids who are aiming at big schools. Maybe do midterms count for anything?
Yeah, I think they count for like a pretty significant portion of your GPA.
Okay. We see a primly dressed student who turns out to be Sabrina kicking her locker and squeaking. That's how orgiastic the tension is.
Ah, yes.
Is that not how orgies work? There's not a lot of locker kicking at a real orgy?
From what I've learned by watching Eyes Wide Shut, there's not a lot of lockers getting kicked. And from what I remember of midterms, there wasn't a lot of locker kicking either. What's happening to Sabrina in this episode is unfair and terrible. But if you wanted to fuck with somebody, I have to salute the creativity and ingenuity of photoshopping and falsifying and using the actual home number of someone for a fake sex phone ad.
The ad says, I miss Sabrina. The only thing I won't do is say no. Only $29.95 for 15 minutes. And it's a big ad, so it probably costs someone quite a lot to put it in the paper. But it seems to be ruining Sabrina's life because she's getting phone calls all night. She's keeping her awake. She can't turn the phone off because her dad's a doctor. The teacher, by the way, is sweater caping. They've got a beige sweater over a beige striped shirt. So it's like they're meant to be an invisible person. And I remember when we had the Jane Lynch episode where she was memorably sweater caping, someone tweeted us to suggest, and I think this is quite a good theory, that they sweater caped on Jane Lynch because the costume was the wrong size. And maybe it is also the case for this one scene teacher.
Wow, was it the wrong size because Jane Lynch is so tall and majestic?
Right, how many majestic sweaters can there be in the Neptune cupboard of sweaters? But Sabrina, complaining to the teacher, says she can't sit her midterm today. I guess she's also holding up everyone else's midterm by complaining. And the teacher's like, okay, we'll sort out another time. And another student, who we only just meet, is displeased by this.
Wait, what happened to your late, too bad, no exceptions?
Mr. Cho, when someone personally attacks you, we'll talk. Go to the library, we'll reschedule.
Thanks.
How about when my mom's elected school board president, we'll talk.
So this is Hamilton Cho, and he's sitting behind Dick, and then behind Hamilton, there's an extra, and all three of them have great hair. It's this beautiful row of great guys' hair. But file Hamilton Cho away in your mind.
Oh, Helen, I really already have. Thank you. Because he's hot!
Well, enjoy him while he lasts, because you'll never see him after today. Sabrina is in the toilet office, and more shit's been happening to her.
Dude.
Her pale green paisley cardigan is ruined.
Is in filthin. And she rolls up to Veronica and says, Veronica, I heard this was kind of like your office. And it's like, you heard correctly, ma'am.
Yep.
That is absolutely right.
Has she got the correct zoning for commercial use? The reason why Sabrina is thus defiled by dirt is that she had a flat tire. Someone had let the air out, and there's no Troy around anymore to help fix it.
He's the only person in Neptune who knows how to change a tire without getting really, really dirty.
She's managed to get the fronts of her upper arms really dirty, rather than the bits of your arms that I think would really be in contact with a car and its wheels and parts. I was curious about that.
Yeah, I've changed a lot of tires, and I really can't think of how she would have ended up like this without maybe just like a ton of like guess and test. But regardless,
she's probably never had to touch her car below the belt before.
We learned that she broke up with Kaz Truman Kaz Truman reappearing once more, played by Zachary Ty Bryan.
Mm.
And she thinks that he is fucking with her and trying to ruin her life.
Right. And she offers to pay Veronica to make him stop. She gives her $100 now and promises her $400 more once she's proven it's Kaz. And it seems like a lot of cash to be carrying around at school.
It does seem like a lot of cash to be carrying. But in 09er territory, maybe not so much.
They'd have cards.
I have made a note that I must share with you.
Ooh.
And that is that I looked up the name Kaz with a Z just to see if there were any obvious what is this short for. And it turns out what I discovered was that Kaz as a name for boys has its root in Slavic. And the name Kaz means, are you ready? Famous destroyer of peace.
Oh, perfect.
And I would say that Sabrina's peace is being famously destroyed throughout this episode.
Do you think they had that in mind when they wrote him into episode 15, though?
Unclear. He destroys the piece of Meg's perfectly dry sweater in that episode by spilling beer all over it.
That's true. Where there's a Kaz causing trouble, there's a sweater in danger. Even if it's not his fault, as in this case. Sabrina, by the way, is played by Megan Henning, who also played Betty Draper's sister-in-law in Mad Men.
Oh my God.
So add that to your chart of people who are in Veronica Mars very briefly and also in other things. Veronica needs her money because Amelia de Longpre's hotel is $70 a night. And I guess she already spent all her money on Leanne Mars's rehab.
Yes.
And she can't really raid the Mars investigations budgets for this because it is off the record.
So she confronts Kaz, who immediately denies it and says, in fact, that he would like to punch the person responsible. But hey, he's got to go because he's late for the gym.
He also says that he's so devoted to Sabrina that he would leap off the roof of the school if she asked.
And who would that serve, exactly?
It didn't seem to serve Duncan very well when he leapt off the bleachers after singing Grease.
Also, given how exasperated Sabrina generally seems to be with Kaz in this episode, it's kind of surprising that she hasn't already asked him to.
Just for a bit of peace. It's not the kind of romantic statement that I would find a particularly alluring or positive one, personally.
No, but it does sound like something a high school boy would say.
That's true. That's true. Without questioning, why would someone want you to do that? I like that Veronica says in voiceover, why is it that the Kazes of the world are forever in transit between romantic failure and the gym?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Which might not be true, but sounds true.
Sounds so true.
And then over to Mars HQ, where there's a real visual treat awaiting.
Helen! Helen! Veronica! Veronica cracks open her, what is this? The laptop that she specifically only uses for her personal Lily Kane murder investigation with her Lily Kane murder investigation desktop wallpaper.
That would explain why she uses the school computers for things that really should be done in private rather than in a busy classroom. There's big yellow letters across the top of the screen that say Lily Kane murder investigation, which you would think she would call it something else.
Yeah, taxes. You know, what do people call porn folders on their computers? Something that will make someone who sees it over your shoulder be like, oh, boring, gotta go. But no, it's Lily Kane murder investigation. And then there are folders all over the desktop, clearly labeled, each of the Kanes, Eli Weevil Navarro, etc. I was watching this episode and I had to like screenshot this desktop situation and I sent it to Helen, who immediately responded because the photo is from prom. It's from that fateful almost skinny dip night when Lily was really stoked about going braless. And Helen said, I too like to remember my dead loved ones at their most busty.
It's what they would have wanted.
It's definitely what Lily would have wanted. And then you followed up by saying, also like Veronica would label a folder Eli Weevil Navarro. Like, why?
Meanwhile, Keith is in a meeting with a woman who is wearing a Chanel tweed-ish jacket and pearls, so you can tell that she's rich and terrible.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of pearls this episode, a lot of pearl wearers. And she wants Keith to honey trap her husband with a sex worker so that her prenup is nullified. And I love that Keith says,
look, I don't know if you were looking for pimp in the phone book and just stopped at PI.
I want her to take him to me.
Yeah, good enough.
This is such a 1930s divorce scheme.
Oh, yeah.
I need my spouse to get caught with someone at a hotel so that we can get a divorce. Keith won't do it because this by law is entrapment. And the client was like, well, I can take my business elsewhere. to Vinnie Van Lo, who doesn't care about laws.
No, no, no. And Keith says you'll probably get the Vinnie Classic if you go to him, which is where, I love this, where Vinnie gets the proof that your husband is cheating, but then goes to your husband and says, double her money, and I'll tell her you've been very well behaved.
I'll tell the wife you're a choir boy.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Drake pisses off, and Logan is there. He's just turned up. Do they not make you buzz in to Mars Investigations? The doors just open, you can just stroll in, take all Veronica's pencils, look at her laptop, which is what Logan's doing.
Yeah, read every single file folder of her Lily Kane murder investigation laptop.
Although from this we learn that Logan had a cast iron alibi. He was out of the country and there were two eyewitnesses, so you can dismiss him from your concerns that next the suspicion beam will be cast upon him.
Yeah, and Veronica's definitely like stressed out that Logan was looking through her business. And he says, what do you think Lily would think of you investigating all the people who loved her? And Veronica says, I loved Lily. And why would I be doing this if I didn't? You know, if she didn't, maybe she could let it go. But no, Helen, she can't.
I also feel like Lily would want Veronica to investigate her mother just to piss off her mother.
That's a great point.
Logan's here to drop off a check for Veronica for looking for Lynn. And Veronica says, Lynn had always been nice to her, and then she tears up the check, even though we know she needs the money.
I love this. I love this because we've seen like Lynn and Keith have like pretty nice interactions.
Yeah.
And like also seeing Veronica say like Lynn was nice to me and not taking the money is really nice.
Yeah. I think also because Logan's money doesn't talk here, a true friendship can develop.
Yeah, that's true. Because yeah, their interaction, like he was kind of like framing their whole interaction, which actually got like pretty kind of like intense, and they kind of like got closer over the course of that case. It was transactional, but Veronica's saying like, let's not make it transactional.
Yeah,
this is I do favors for friends,
right? But also I guess it means he can trust her because she's only doing stuff to do the stuff for him and not in order to get some of the Eccles squillions out of him.
Squillions.
Now we don't see Erin Eccles this episode, but there is a little Harry Hamlin tribute because Amelia DeLongpre in her hotel is watching Clash of the Titans on TV.
Oh my God.
Do you think that in the world of Veronica Mars, Erin Eccles and Harry Hamlin are the same in that
they have the same filmography?
Right. Or is it more just a funny joke?
I'm going to go funny joke. That's where I'm putting my $20 down.
Either way, I like it. Other entertainments happening in the room. Veronica is explaining the mystery of Lily Kane's shoe evidence to Amelia.
Oh, God. Haven't we seen these shoes enough? Haven't we looked upon these hand-decorated keds enough times? Helen, when will it be enough?
I don't know. Maybe in the season finale. She mentions that all three Kanes falsified their alibis.
Dude.
Did Duncan?
I think that Duncan was blacked out, allegedly. So I think his parents falsified his alibi for him.
And Amelia recalls that a long time ago, Abel Coons used to be a normal dad, but then he changed when Jake Kane screwed him out of the streaming video pattern and he started locking himself away. He was trying to create a program to put Kane's out of business, but failed. And eventually, when her mum brought him a cup of coffee and spilled it, he hit her mum. And so Amelia and her mum left. And that was that. Bit of background Koontz-wise.
Woman about town Veronica pops over to Sabrina's house from the motel to the mansion where Sabrina is studying and speaking Italian with her mother?
Yep, it's Italian. Yeah, her mother is Jessica, who was heading up the hearing for Mr. Rooks in episode 14.
I liked her a lot better in that episode. Now she sucks.
She's wearing an Argyle cardigan over a pastel-coloured polo shirt. And I'm just telling you this because these two have a lot of cardigans over polo shirts game this episode. But she is more informal than her daughter, which is weird. And what's rude is Veronica turns up to help Sabrina, and on her way in, she sees a pale yellow pickup truck cruise by. And Sabrina says to her mum, Veronica's here to be tutored. And Jessica's like, well, don't forget about your own studies. And then she says in Italian, don't worry, if she stays too long, I will lock her in the cellar.
Oh my God, that's what's going on?
And then Jessica says, as a retort to Sabrina saying she'll lock Veronica in the cellar, but she could open the good wine. It'd better be the attic. These pricks, what a terrible family.
Wow. you've galaxy-brained me, Helen, about these people are even shittier than I thought they were.
Yeah, they're shitty in two languages, Jenny.
Wow.
And then Jessica says, Lynn is sleeping, so keep it down. And I assume Lynn is a baby because there's a pram, but Lynn is not really a 2005-era baby name. And I do get that people in the world have the same names as each other, but in a series where there's a character of that name who is either recently died by suicide or deliberately vanished, this seems like a weird choice to me.
Very weird choice. Also, what's up with that pram? That's a weird-ass, Tim Burton-ass pram.
It's an old pram. Veronica sees the truck pass again, and the phone rings. It's someone answering that Miss Sabrina sex chat ad. And Veronica answers. We know she's got great fucking with people on the phone game. That was an unfortunate choice of verb for the sex chat context. We know that she has game in tricking around.
Helen!
Oh, God. None of the words. Can't use any of them.
She's good at giving it to people. Yeah, this isn't going great.
And while she's doing the sex chat line thing, she also private eyes with the Z, the person who's calling.
Hello? Yes, this is Miss Sabrina. Bad boy. Well, Nestor Greeley of Encinitas. 20 grand on credit cards, 2 divorces, and a repoed Sebring. You have been a bad boy. Miss Sabrina commands you. Put your pants back on and get a job.
It's not always people's fault if they don't have a job, Veronica.
That is true. But he should put his pants back on. Then Veronica's had enough of seeing this truck go back and forth. So she's like, hey, could I borrow that ancient pram? Is that yours? Like, okay, first of all, it's in your house.
It just happens to be sitting in the study, ready to go.
Yeah. And she lets it roll out into the street at just the right moment. So the truck comes to a screeching halt and she runs up and flashes a flashlight into the driver's face. And it's Kaz Truman. And she says in a referential tone that I was not expecting,
hello, Truman.
Do you recognize this reference, Helen?
She
says it the exact same way that Jerry Seinfeld is always saying,
hello, Newman.
Kaz maintains that he is innocent, even though Veronica's like, Kaz, you were lurking. The innocent rarely lurk. And he's like, well, I wanted to catch the harasser, so I was watching the house, and then I could be the hero and get Sabrina back, mentions jumping off the roof again.
It's like, dude, enough. We get it.
And Sabrina's like, what was with the junky old truck, which he borrowed off the gardener? The truck looks plenty good to me. Again, I don't speak the car language of these people.
Yeah, there's a strange car hierarchy that we cannot even pretend to understand in this town.
No.
But hey, knock, knock. There's somebody at the door. Helen, who is it?
It's a bunch of party people ready to party.
Yes.
They've got glow sticks.
They've come from a rave. They've clearly come from a rave. They were told in fairly explicit shorthand that there would be ecstasy at this house.
Right.
So here they are.
Yeah, they got a flyer.
They got a flyer at a nearby rave, perhaps. So they're rave hopping. Yeah. That seems to be the thing.
Yeah, not on a school night. Also, I like that they open the door and immediately pumping music starts. So they brought it with them, but they only press play when the door's open.
Hell yeah.
And then stop it when the door shuts. And they turn up right on time at 11 p.m.
The raving hour, as I've always understood it to be.
So another prank played on Sabrina. These are all very kind of 90s japes. The sex chat line, the rave prank.
But all very, very effective and disturbing. In the literal, non-psychological sense. But also, I guess, cumulatively, it may be coming psychologically disturbing, but it is an actual disturbance, like in an ongoing way. She just can't get a minute to study.
Yeah, and also I assume that more ravers might turn up through the night, so her sleep will be fragmented again.
Oh, God.
Not good conditions for academic excellence. Veronica turns up at the motel with bags of groceries for Amelia, and her voiceover says that the inquiry she made at Sultans of Acid, the other rave place, were a dead end, so don't even bother thinking about who sent the ravers over in that way.
It's none of your business.
And Amelia wants Veronica to arrange a visitation with Abel Koontz for the first time she can remember. She really wants to talk to him.
Oh, man. This is really... it's just sucking. It's just making Veronica's choices seem worse and worse, in my opinion.
But sweet news is that Joy is about to arrive. in the form of Vinnie Van Lo, played by Ken Marino, who is so fun.
I hope you're not thinking of dyeing that hair, because when you come work for me, you'll find that straying husbands are most likely to chase skinny blondes. No, I'm kidding, of course. They'll chase anything, but seriously, don't dye that hair.
And I love Vinny because he's delightfully cheesy, but also he's kind of a relaxing character because nothing too bad really seems to happen when he's around.
Right. It's not like your best friend is going to get murdered. It's like, this guy is such a fucking goon.
Actually, Keith, I was just coming by to say thanks. You know, once you set up shop here, I got a little nervous. Former detective, sheriff, law enforcement machine, hitting the Neptune PI scene. Working the whole B-movie, back-alley vibe. Clients love that. I thought I was toast, but here we are sending each other referrals.
Referrals? Did I send you...
Redhead with the husband problem.
Ah, right. I wasn't actually referring so much as warning.
I was thinking, we might work together, you know, juggle some cases, maximize the market.
Actually, Vinny, we're not.
Ah, you're on a fence. Okay. But I have 10 cases, 500 a day. I can't handle them all. I'll farm them to you for three, and I'm talking no-brainers, free of major ethical issues. Easy money. Win-win. Just saying. Think it over.
Free of major ethical issues.
What about minor ones?
Well, Keith's always committing minor crimes.
That is very true. That's very true. But somehow, yes, he has some kind of moral line in his own personal sand, and Vinnie Van Lo lives on the other side of that line. So... hey, there's a dinner at the Canes. There's a Scholastic Excellence Dinner for the top juniors and seniors. And do we have any reason to be prepared for the fact that Veronica would be one of the top, like, five juniors, scholastically speaking?
No, I would have thought, given all of her time commitments, she could probably, like, bump along in the middle, not attracting too much attention either way. Although we also know that she has an amazing, brilliant brain, so... it's possible.
I think it's like weirdly selective for them to pick like about five kids from each class. The seniors, it makes sense because they're like in a race right now. But like they bring in like five juniors to be like, hey, you guys have the best GPAs now. A lot could happen in another year. And also like...
here are the people you'll be competing with for the next year of your life.
But also the Canes open the door and act like they didn't know Veronica was on the list on their 10-person long Scholastic Excellence dinner guest list. They just somehow didn't see her name, the name they least want to see.
What I found curious is that Jake Kane and Celeste Kane answer the door together, even though they've got people in. So usually you would just send one of you, or the help in their case.
Right.
Also weird, they've got their best party smiles on. And then when they open the door and see Veronica, those smiles fall, even though the door is made out of glass, so they could already see her. The fuck? The Kane house looks like a hotel lobby because it's got these huge expanses of space, got a lot of glass. It seems to have a living wall. It's got the acoustics of expensive house, I think, because of the marble floors.
Right.
Good bit of sound design there. Duncan's around, not because he's top five, because he's one of the Kane's top two children. He's chatting to Sabrina Hamilton from class is there. Veronica watches Celeste and Jake bickering. Why do we have to have these boring dinner parties with a load of children, Jake? Why?
Yeah, and then Veronica has the first of what will be a number of sort of like Veronica murder visions, in which she imagines how Celeste could have accidentally killed Lily. Like, how that could have played out.
Yeah, they're like speculative flashbacks.
Right, right. And thus they have a speculative flashback filter.
Yeah. Scenario the first, Celeste overreacted when Lily gave her some chat.
Uh-huh.
When Celeste said, Lily, she, meaning Veronica, cannot come back here ever.
Chill out, mommy dearest. That's no way to treat your stepdaughter. I think Duncan might have already slipped Veronica a bit too much of the old Kane hospitality.
Gross. And then they exchange slaps, and then it escalates when Celeste grabs some heavy thing.
Looks like an ashtray, like a fancy ashtray, and like smashes her around the head, which seemed, it's quite hard slapping, but that still seemed like way too much of an escalation.
Yeah.
And then back to the present, and Jake is sort of outlining the terms of this scholarship, and starting this year, the valedictorian will receive a full-time scholarship to the university. Lucky enough to have him, massive pause. Or her.
Yeah. How about that massive pause? The person in the number one slot is currently female, sir.
So I can understand why Veronica is going into these speculative flashbacks just because it's so dull in the present. So this time she sees Jake catching Lily canoodling with Weevil, pulls her off of him, throws her down, and she hits her head on the table. And even though you would think a father in the heat of the moment accidentally killing his daughter would be like, oh shit, oh no, terrible, he doesn't flicker. He's just like, Weevil, say a word and I will make you take the fall.
Holding Weevil by the ear. Also, even in Veronica's murder visions, Weevil is hilarious. Jake's like, you're having sex with my daughter. And Weevil's like, well, not right now. Not at this exact moment, sir, as you can see.
Weevil's not wearing a henley in this scene, Jenny. He's not wearing a jacket.
No, he is topless. Please, sir, put on a henley and a motorcycle jacket and get on a big hog and ride away. Thank you.
Yeah. And then in the present, but a supernatural present, the dead and very gory Lily lures Veronica out by the pool and lies on her lounger and is like, ugh, worst party ever. Nerd fest.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is really a thing. What do you think the ghost of Lily Kane is? Do you think it's Veronica's subconscious?
I think it is a plot-hastening device.
Aha!
That's a good question, because we have seen this before when it's not been a flashback to Lily, it's been a supernatural Lily, and with Duncan as well, when she's like, wake up, donut, or something like that.
Yeah. Is it the same Lily? Is it individual projections from Veronica and Duncan? What's happening? Is it the Gargoyle King?
Is it just a particularly charismatic representation of their internal monologue or dialogue?
Right, right.
I suppose the utility of it in this case is Lily saying her parents aren't murderers. Veronica's imagination is overactive.
Right, right, right.
And she's interrupted by real Duncan, not Dreamscape Duncan, asking who she's hiding from. Good question. And I do think this is a good iteration of Duncan that we get.
Yeah, that he's like out here saying like, hey, I like to come out here too and like think about her. And I like asked my parents to sell the house right after it happened. But like now I'm glad that like we're still here and I can like come out here. That's nice. Good brother Duncan.
Yeah. Back to school. And Sabrina is crying.
Oh, no.
And not because she's wearing a sickly pale pink polo underneath an orange Argyle cardigan with
horrifying.
A pearl necklace.
No!
And a big pirate's button.
Everyone stop wearing pearls.
Yeah, God. And the Argyle cardigan polo shirt combination runs in the family.
Ugh.
What's Sabrina so upset about?
She's been bumped out of her 100th of a point lead in the valedictorian race. And now Hamilton Cho is in the top slot. Hot.
It's not a hotness league, though, Jenny. Also, does she need the scholarship as much as he does?
Gee whiz, I wonder. How could we ever figure that out?
So then we go to visit Hamilton himself at Cho's Pizza since 1967, the sign says.
Home of the Peking Duck Pizza.
I've had one of those in the past.
Really?
It's okay. The restaurant serves pizza, wonton soup, and sake, so that's representing many nations.
Hell yeah. Everything you want under one convenient roof.
And Veronica chats with Hamilton, and she's never been to Cho's Pizza before, which surprises me given the Mars eating habits.
Seriously?
And thus we learn that Hamilton got into Oxford but needs $1 billion in order to go.
So that's $250 million a year? So it's like $125 million per semester?
Rents there are high. Small town, low housing stock.
The conversion rate is a nightmare.
Yeah.
He seems like a really nice boy.
Lovely hair.
Great hair. Great attitude. He works 20 hours a week. He doesn't have any tutors. Also, y'all, in this reality, is the Kane Scholarship the only scholarship available to anyone? You have to imagine that somebody with grades like Hamilton's would be a candidate for other scholarships. They are around.
He also gets Veronica, because when he's talking about how he doesn't have that much sympathy for Sabrina because she's so privileged, whereas he's working really hard and doesn't have the benefits of wealth or connection, he says to Veronica, you know what I'm talking about. Of course she does.
Yes, class alliance.
He doesn't know that she's putting a tracker on his car.
But she's got to do her job, because rich people pay her bills, apparently.
Yep. Something odd is happening at the Mars home.
What is this? The only thing more conspicuous than traipsing around campus with your enormous broad-shouldered frame and your fedora and your long, flapping trench coat is breaking into a house where you've got to imagine Keith's car is outside. What is he doing?
Right. Okay. So Keith in his bathrobe, sees the handle of the front door wiggling, and so goes and opens it. And it's Clarence Weedman in his 1940s looking outfit, looking very, very tall. Keith puts on his "I'll be fucking with you soon" face.
And his "I'll be fucking with you soon" robe.
Ah. And Keith invites Clarence in for coffee because Keith is a very civilized chap.
Bless him.
And, you know, doesn't show anger. And Clarence explains that he's looking for someone, shows Keith Emilia de Longpre's headshot. And Keith's like, "Well, if you want me to find her, I'm $250 a day."
But Clarence was thinking maybe more that that Emilia de Longpre might be like stashed in a coat closet at the Mars residence, or like maybe in the back of a cupboard or under a bed or in the crawl space.
Or in a musical box.
Yes. Just about anywhere. Have you seen one of these around, Keith?
Keith has not seen an Emilia de Longpre around in his two-room apartment, and then shows Clarence Weedman out. And I love Quiet Power Keith.
Quiet Power Keith is great.
He doesn't really have the upper hand here, but he's very much in charge. Later, Veronica gets in with Backup.
Backup! Who's a good boy? Who is a good boy?
He's a very good boy. Keith knew about Abel Koontz's terminal stomach cancer, and I'm not sure how.
He has his ways.
He has his ways. He also realizes that Emilia de Longpre does not know.
Right. Yeah, this is...
Dangerous game.
Dangerous game. Keith is very worried for Veronica's safety. And we get this information from Keith that Jake called Clarence 5 minutes before he arrived home. Then the timeline went to pieces. Then Keith started to realize that the core body temp data wasn't matching up with the timeline. And Keith thinks Jake called Clarence after Lily's body was discovered. And Veronica's like, "Bur-ru-ru, bur-ru-ru, bur-ru-ru, Veronica Mars murder vision," and sees Clarence Weedman in her mind's eye arriving with ice to bring Lily's body temp down, and then thus making it seem like she's been dead for longer, I guess.
Add that to the Gantt-Feynman chart of everyone's alibis on the day of Lily Kane's murder.
And now I must ask you, Helen, I'm so sorry, what is a Gantt-Feynman chart?
I learned what they were from my husband, who used to be in data visualization, but he used to draw one of these when we were cooking Christmas dinner. So you would have like a line for when the turkey needs to be in the oven, and then a line for when the potatoes needed to be in. And so the lines would be like different lengths for the cooking time, and you could see what the overlap was, stuff like that. Are you visualizing?
Yes, I'm visualizing, and also my mouth is watering.
For charts.
Charts and Christmas dinner.
Veronica is on a stakeout outside Cho's Pizza with Backup, and she's thinking about how Clarence Weedman is ex-Army Intelligence, ex-FBI, ex-God knows what else, probably a good man in a bad situation. Is he good, though? He seems not that good, because he really seems to deliberately play up to an evil image.
Yeah, questionable at best. Also, how old is this guy? How could he have this kind of a resume? Like, think about the stuff that would have to come before you are an Army Intelligence officer and before you're in the FBI. You've got to do, like, there are other requirements that you have to do before you get into those positions, right?
Unless she's speculating. Maybe she's like, what? Maybe this, maybe that, rather than this and also that.
Okay.
Possibly. I don't know. Maybe he's just like very young looking. And so she has another speculative flashback of Jake tearily calling Clarence, who turns up with a trunk full of ice and tells Celeste and Jake to decide who found Lily.
Yeah.
But then Sabrina interrupts this reverie. She calls. A car alarm has been going off for 2 hours. But Veronica can see that it can't be Hamilton because he's at work. She can see him. So Veronica tells Sabrina to go and get the car that's going off, license plate number. And she says it's been going off for 2 hours, so she could have done that earlier.
Yeah, at any point. Before she can do any investigating of that license plate, though, she's got to ask Logan when he's going to tell everyone about her really subtle Lily Kane murder investigation laptop.
Yeah, they're in the media room, which was the scene of another sensitive moment between them back in episode 4 when Logan was editing that tribute video to Lily.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So maybe this is their place.
I'd like to know when you plan on telling Duncan and everyone how I'm psycho, or at least unhealthily obsessed. I'd like to be prepared.
What Logan does want to know about is Duncan's mental health and epilepsy, because he didn't know about it. And he's like, I've known Duncan since kindergarten, although In episode 4, it was established that Logan didn't move to Neptune until he was 12.
Ha! Detective Helen Zaltzman reporting for duty. So Veronica tells Logan that Duncan's symptoms can include fits, crying, laughing, bouts of rage. Pretty much, was there anything else? Like,
so I have some issues with what is happening in these few lines of dialogue. So firstly, Logan says, I've known him since kindergarten. Why didn't he ever mention it to me? I went to school with kids with epilepsy and we knew that they had it. So that if they had a fit, we knew what was happening and how to get help. And then Veronica says, I don't think he and his parents wanted anyone to know. I think they still wanted to be president someday, shamingly implying that you couldn't have a president who has epilepsy or mental health stuff to deal with. And then thirdly, when you've got Logan saying, does he have like fits or something? And Veronica's like, well, possibly that, or possibly hysterical laughter, uncontrollable crying or blind rage. Never heard of these manifestations of epilepsy, have you? I'm not an expert, but...
I thought they were, when they said that stuff, they were referring to whatever else he has going on besides epilepsy.
Yes, his mystery mental health thing.
His very mysterious mental health issue.
Yeah, because, you know, mental health issues mean anything can happen.
Anything goes, Helen. It's like an advent calendar, but instead of chocolate, just depending on the day, the sky's the limit. Anything could be behind that tiny little door.
Mental health makes any plot go with a bang.
Ugh.
But Logan has seen an alarming Duncan event in the past.
Right. He tells Veronica about one time when he heard some wild noises and ran in to find Duncan with his hands around Jake's throat. Just like going to town. And then eventually Duncan went limp and he was just like normal Duncan again. And alleged that he didn't remember anything afterwards. And it was the week Duncan and Veronica broke up. Yeah, a lot of
Motivation plus mental health and epilepsy
equals
bullshit.
Yes.
Some better news, though. Sabrina's got the car license plates and via private eyes with Z.com, Veronica discovers they are registered to one Deborah Villarreal, who, according to Veronica's voiceover, is touring Europe in Disney on Ice. But according to the screen she's looking at, she's in Omaha. Either way, though, Deborah can't have been there in Sabrina's street herself.
Right.
But Veronica also discovers she used to be married to Vinnie Van Lo.
What are the odds? It's time to go to Vinnie Van Lo's headquarters, Veronica decides. So she shows up with some cookies and a spirit pin, sells the cookies and gives the pin to Vinnie's secretary, who is also his mom.
You're racing through this. There's so much glory to me because this office is all like red, white and black. And Veronica's voiceover is like,
I'm not an expert on the male mind, so maybe someday someone can tell me what it is about chrome, glass and fake black leather that are supposed to represent masculinity.
But someone had a lot of fun dressing this set because there's a framed photo of Bill Clinton behind the door, plus someone who is probably important that I don't recognize. And then on top of the cabinet in Pride of Place, a photo of a casually dressed George and Barbara Bush. And across it, in big capital letters, is written, Vinnie, we love you. But no signature. And then behind that, there's a vase full of those champagne glasses, which have stalks but no bases. So you have to hold them all the time.
Oh, my word.
Suggesting he does a lot of celebrating with impractical glassware.
Right, right.
But Vinnie's mum seems really delighted by this spirit pin that Veronica sells her.
Oh, hell yeah.
I love that Vinnie employs his mom. It's another family detective business.
You know what? They're not so different, those Van Lo's and those Marses. Not so different after all.
Right. This is Veronica's future. In 20 years, she could be in an office with framed photos of past presidents wearing a fake moustache.
Having a mayonnaise crisis.
She's ostensibly there to tell Vinnie that Keith doesn't want to take the cases, but in the spirit of mutual cooperation, does want to give Vinnie this Mars Investigations pen. Wow. And Vinnie is much less dismissive of the pen than I would have been. And then Veronica asks who hired him to harass Sabrina.
Sabrina Fuller. Doesn't ring a bell. I don't believe I know such a person.
See, I think that you do. Either that or your ex-wife really hates academic achievers.
My ex-wife, Brenda?
No.
Masako.
Deborah.
Veronica interrupts. She should have just left him to list every ex-wife.
But much like Clarence Weedman, when did he have the time to get married and divorced so many times? He's still a young guy.
He seems pretty mellow, so maybe he just doesn't sweat it.
Just like he doesn't sweat Veronica asking about Sabrina Fuller, he's just deny, deny, deny till you die, sends Veronica on her way, but not before she rips his mustache off his face.
Yeah. He says, I'm in the middle of a job, and holds up a sandwich, which I also love. Like, he really doesn't give a shit.
I feel you, Vinny. Relatable content.
Sabrina is waiting outside in the car. She is sweater caping and wearing pearls, so you can tell how hard she sucks. She's more formally dressed than Barbara Bush. And they listen to The Bug, which, of course, is in the pen. Vinny's onto it very quickly and does a magnificent performance of Hall & Oates' Private Eyes.
Incredible.
Out of the window, complete with pelvic thrusts and butt slapping.
Yes!
Hey, Ma, who's that band I like? Oh, yeah, Hall & Oates. John Hall and Daryl Oates. That one song? Private Eyes, I'm watching you. They see your every move. Yeah, Veronica Mars, I'm watching you.
Private Eyes, I'm watching you. Hall & Oates, Veronica. They wrote the song and now you're living it. How's it feel? Private Eyes, we're watching you. Watching your every move. Baby, Private Eyes, Veronica Mars. Oh, oops.
He does say John Hall and Daryl Oates instead of Daryl Hall and John Oates.
I'm sure that had to be like intentional on the writer's part,
yes.
Right?
No, it's a quality bit of detail.
Incredible.
But of course, who's cleverer, Vinny or Veronica?
Well, it's Veronica, of course, because that pen was like a decoy so that he would have something to throw out the window. The freaking spirit pin has a video camera in it.
And lucky for her, Vinny's mum puts on the massive spirit pin rather than just throwing
it on the
away.
Desk. Yeah, like a normal person would.
And Vinny is immediately on the case.
What are you doing? Can you bring the mints? We need to get rid of that cake car. Call Gary, have him tow it, and get Jim on the horn.
You want a pizza? You just ate.
Come on, it's business.
What? Sabrina, I know who did it.
Cut to Mr. Cho at the Kane household along with Hamilton, Veronica, Sabrina. What's that mom's name? Vanessa?
Jessica.
Jessica, of course.
Jim Cho had hired Vinny to harass Sabrina. He says, my son never had a fair chance. They didn't give him the same advantages as the kids he had to compete with.
Ugh.
To be fair, it's not about him not giving them to him. It's just like he couldn't afford them because he doesn't have otherworldly wealth.
Yeah.
That's not something to blame yourself for. So the Chos are both wearing dark blue. Jake and Celeste Kane are both wearing shades of stone that match their home decor. And Sabrina and her mum are both wearing pink. Jessica's in a pink Argyle cardigan over a pink polo. And this didn't ring true to me because it's a very sugary Madison Sinclair style look. And I feel like, you know, Jessica is quite an authoritative person. And I feel like she'd be dressing more for stern power in this scenario.
Hey, but pink can be a power color.
Yeah, but in this case, with the whole Argyle polo shirt thing, it isn't. It's an informal, like, golf outfit.
Oh my God. Maybe she's like, this situation isn't worth my power outfits.
Right, or maybe my black Argyle cardigan was in the wash. And Jake is quite conciliatory. I think he kind of gets that it's not Hamilton or Sabrina's faults. And offers to split the scholarship. And Jessica is like, fuck no.
Yeah, this sucks. This sucks so bad. Also, if you think about a billionaire and you think about, I don't know, tuition, even to an Ivy League school, would it really make that much of a dent for Jake to just pay two scholarships? Come on, Jake, just do it. Hamilton's a good guy.
He's a Fortune 500 company.
I'll punish him for his father's crimes.
Jessica says if Hamilton removes him from the valedictorian race, they won't press charges. But it's not Hamilton's fault.
Yeah, fuck that. Fuck Jessica.
But Hamilton's very cool about it. Hamilton's like, sure, I'll do it, sure.
Because he loves his dad. Ah, Hamilton.
Yeah, it's sweet when Veronica is like, what are you going to do now afterwards when they're all leaving?
You know, work two jobs, take out loans, stay at school. 20 years from now, she'll be working for me.
I hope not.
And so his backup option is him going to UCLA, which sounds like a pretty good backup.
Yeah, right?
It's also where Leonard Wu, the actor who plays Hamilton Cho, did study.
Wow!
Veronica does a voiceover about unfairness, and I'm not sure that it works, but I guess they needed a segue to the Emilia Delongpre plot.
Life is fundamentally unfair. It takes real talent to make unfair seem cool. Hamilton Cho, proof that kids love their dads no matter how badly they screw up. It's the exact kind of love I'm banking on, from Amelia de Longpre.
At the Loyola Marymount campus, at night, Clarence, still in his very obvious hat, asks a passing student for a cell phone to call AAA.
Yes, and he's carefully staked out a particular student who turns out to be Amelia's boyfriend.
No accidents here.
No.
Veronica calls Amelia, who is reading books in the dark.
One dank dark room is the same as the next.
It's true. And Amelia gets a call that appears to be from her boyfriend, but it's Clarence.
Oh my God.
And he says that tiny blonde cute as a bug person isn't who she says she is.
It's like interesting because I feel like she hasn't necessarily lied about who she is, right?
I suppose she's lied about her motivations.
Right.
Although has she? Because she does want to get Abel Kuntz exonerated. But she just hasn't told her that her father's dying. So Veronica and Keith rush off to Amelia's to get the settlement papers that her mum has sent, and they knock on the hotel room door, but
alas,
only Clarence is still there.
Where is she?
Gone.
You took her?
She took herself. Ms. de Longpre was particularly upset with you, Miss Mars, for failing to mention her father's declining health.
Let's go, honey. Come on.
Where?
Where would you go if you had your own Swiss bank account? Thank you for bringing Amelia to Neptune, Ms. Mars. She just finalized her father's settlement with Kane Software.
Veronica is pretty miserable at this point, and she's sitting on the floor by the Mars safe, disconsolate. The fish tank is merrily bubbling away. It's quite a loud sound in the background.
Yeah, a perfect soundtrack by which to discover that your father has been using the numbers from his honeymoon flights for his safe combination.
I don't remember the numbers of my honeymoon flights.
I don't remember the number of any flights, ever.
Right, even when I'm still on the plane.
Yeah, right?
And it's time for the Marses to really join forces on this case. And Keith opens the safe and puts the huge murder file in front of Veronica. Happy birthday. And Veronica wants to know why Keith thought the Canes had covered up something with Lily's death.
Oh ho!
Flashback.
Flashback.
Real flashback this time. Flashback hands.
Thank you, Helen.
Jake is crying, describing finding Lily. That seems like the kind of emotion that he would have. Duncan is visible in the background, rocking back and forth, as we've seen him in previous flashbacks to this night. Celeste said that Duncan had been in the shower, and then we hear the buzzing of a washing machine. Even though in the main part of the Kane house, do you think you'd be anywhere within earshot of a domestic appliance?
Probably not, but they also have marble floors, so that sound probably carries.
Yeah, no walls, just big open spaces.
Yep.
Maybe. Also, do the Canes even know how to work their own washing appliances?
Right. With two full-time housekeepers, when was the last time they had to work one of those machines for themselves?
Yeah. Well, Keith also wonders why the Canes, with these two full-time housekeepers, were doing laundry that night and he found a soccer uniform in the dryer.
Oh my God! Duncan plays soccer!
And Veronica's voiceover considers Duncan's ability to kill Lily and seems implausible to me. You know, you spin the wheel of Duncan and do you land on Ashtray Murderer Duncan? I don't.
Yeah, it doesn't really... It doesn't feel right.
You also know that with five episodes still to go in the season, it's not going to be Duncan.
Right, and also Helen, as Veronica Mars' murder vision Duncan deals that blow to his sister, there is some distinct distorted guitar pick slide noise. Further establishing this show's obvious anti-guitarist position, I just want to call attention to this. I continue to be shocked and appalled. How dare they? How dare they?
I'm so sorry.
Electric guitar is not the sound of murder. I object.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
I think I read an interview with Teddy Dunn saying that he had to play Duncan kind of deliberately blank so as to not give away this plotline earlier in the season. And he also said that when he was told that Duncan was bipolar, he did some research and read that the drugs used to treat bipolar often leave the person emotionally distant, and so decided to play Duncan that way, which I'm not sure fully reads in his performance. But I suppose it is an interesting problem for an actor to have, where you have to not give away lots of different twists and turns.
Yeah, perhaps not like fully, as you say, like not fully realized or communicated to the audience necessarily.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a little bit of a mixed bag, I think, from Duncan, from Teddy Dunn.
He's a successful lawyer now, so it's worked out.
That's so great. And hey, speaking of lawyers, I know a lawyer. You know a lawyer too. Her name is Lo Dodds, and she is our trusted correspondent on all things legal and Southern Californian. Let's talk to her now for today's lowdown. So, Jessica, what's her bucket? Says that if Hamilton Cho removes himself from the valedictorian race, they won't press charges. Can you tell us what kind of charges they could press and what kind of sentencing Mr. Cho would be in danger of facing? Please.
She's probably going to try to press charges for harassment or for stalking or for making annoying phone calls. But the problem with all of those things is that Mr. Cho didn't actually do them. Vinny was the one who committed those crimes.
Aha.
Yeah. So he's more likely looking at aiding and abetting or conspiracy. And Vinny's probably looking at the same charges for conspiracy as well, because he didn't actually make the calls, right? The annoying phone calls came from other people seeing that ad in the paper.
Right.
So it's still pretty loose. And I actually don't think they could probably make it stick. Like, Veronica figured it out. But figuring it out and proving all of that in a court of law is like a completely different thing. And like for stalking, you need to have some sort of credible threat. She needed to be in fear of her life. And even Sabrina knew she wasn't in fear for her life. She knew it was to fuck up her grades. So she wasn't actually afraid. If I were Hamilton, though, I'd still probably take the deal, because Jessica seems like the kind of person that if he doesn't get like a release from her in writing, Sabrina could still not get the scholarship. She could get beat by some other student potentially. And if she doesn't, Jessica's definitely going to come back and sue them. And she might not win, but it would deplete the Cho's already kind of minimal resources. So yeah, I'd take the deal if I were Hamilton. I'm sure there's another scholarship if he's got such awesome grades.
So Vinny is kind of more culpable than the person who is hiring Vinny.
Yeah, I think, well, they could probably both get charged with the same stuff, but they'd be charged with conspiracy. But again, Mr. Cho isn't the one actually committing the acts, and we don't know what deal they had. It's going to be hard to prove. I don't think it would stick.
And then would Abel Koontz face any charges for confessing falsely and accepting a payoff?
Yeah, so he's going to get charged with offering false evidence and offering a false confession. That's a felony. He'll get charged with obstruction. But honestly, Abel has been in prison now for a while. So considering that he's not going to be there for the crime he did commit, he'd probably just get sentenced to time served and just released. And obviously he doesn't care because he's dying.
Oh, right. Yes.
Jake Kane, on the other hand, is fucked. And I mean, it's lucky that he has tons of money and super high-priced attorneys, because he's getting charged with obstruction, with conspiracy, with bribing a witness, with tampering with evidence, extortion.
And Clarence Weedman as well would be facing a bunch of charges for that.
Yes, he would. But he's gonna testify against Jake Kane and get himself a sweeter deal. That's probably how that works out.
Aha.
And then would Clarence Weedon be facing anything for trying to go into the Mars home?
Only criminal stupidity. Like, I don't understand.
What the hell?
Why would you try to break into a house in the middle of the day when Keith, well, it like morning time, when Keith and Veronica's cars are clearly there, and he like rattles the doorknob? He's a shit thief. Like, I mean, he makes it completely obvious that he's trying to break in, but he doesn't actually break in. Keith lets him in. So technically he hasn't committed a crime.
Like a vampire invited in.
That's true. And offered coffee, which he doesn't drink, which is rude.
I'm 6.5 seasons through The Gilmore Girls right now.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
Yeah.
The darkest hour is upon you.
I too. I'm sorry.
It's hard. It's hard.
The main lesson that I'm learning from this show is that no one drinks the coffee they've ordered or eats the food they've ordered, which might be a television-wide epidemic, which is why I bring it up here in the case of Clarence Weedman and the unconsumed coffee.
Well, you know that when Keith offers coffee, usually he's wooing.
True. And yes. Maybe Clarence was just not.
He's like, no, I don't see you that way. I think of you more as an enemy.
As my nemesis.
Jenny, were there any lines that particularly stood out to you in this episode?
What really worked for me was, why is it that the Kazes of the world are forever in transit between romantic failure and the gym? Which, as you noted, is not necessarily true, but it is funny.
It's a nice image. And also, isn't exercise supposed to be helpful when you're in emotional turmoil?
Yes.
I don't think it's something for Kaz to be ashamed of. Plenty other things, but not this thing.
Yeah, don't waste your time on this, Kaz. What did you like?
I'm just going to go for the whole of Vinny singing Private Eyes with modifications. It's a wonderful performance. I bet Vinny really does well at the Neptune karaoke.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I want to see that.
There's got to be some like blooper reels or bonus DVD extras. And how did this episode sit for you overall?
You know, a lot happened.
Yes.
I like Hamilton. I feel like it was a blast to watch. And the addition of Vinny Venlo is a big positive in my general experience of the show. I'm going to give this episode 4 out of 5 tuna sandwiches with extra mayo.
Ooh. Yeah, so much happens. It's a lot to keep track of because you've got so much of this Lily Kane plot advancement, but you also have the side plot of the Abel Coon stuff, and then you have the Sabrina stuff, which, like, I don't really care about the scholarship stuff, but I did quite like awful Sabrina and Hamilton with his beautiful hair. There were a lot of Argyle things. There's possibly slightly too much going on, so some of it may be a bit rushed. That's a thing that happens quite a lot with the show. They're doing a lot per episode in a short time.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the Clarence Weedman versus Keith Mars coffee scene.
Love that.
Love Vinny and his mum. So yeah, I guess actually I did like it, and I'll give it 3.9 out of 5 prams.
Ha! Excellent.
And this is the last episode of Veronica Mars Investigations for 2019. But we will be back in the new year. 7th of January, I believe, to investigate the final straight of season 1.
Yeah, so please, in our absence, sing some Hall & Oates songs festively into a pen. Think of us as we'll be thinking of you. Have a wonderful holiday if you are celebrating any kind of holiday this month, please.
And enjoy the absence of holiday celebration if you're not.
Yes.
So that's another episode of Veronica Mars Investigated.
Case closed.
That was Season 1, Episode 17, Cains and Abels.
Watch Season 1, Episode 18, and join us next time to investigate it.
Find the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at VMIPod.
The website where the show hides behind a fake mustache is VMIPod.com.
I'm Helen Zaltzman, and you can hear my other podcast, The Illusionist, at theillusionist.org, and Answer Me This at answermethispodcast.com.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs, and you can hear more of my speaking voice on my other podcast, Buffering the Vampire Slayer, and you can hear my singing voice by visiting jennyowenyoungs.com and exploring my many recorded musical works there, including my new EP, Night Shift, which just came out in November, and my brand new sad bummer Xmas song, Maybe Next Year, which just came out December 6th. So listen and enjoy if you like.
I love sad bummer Xmas songs.
I'm here to help, Helen. I'm here to help you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This episode was edited and mixed by Zach McNeese.
The music is by Martin Ostwick and Jenny Owen Youngs.
The sheriff of this town is Hrishikesh Hirway.
Distributed by PRX.
Until next time, who's your daddy?
Who's actually your daddy, Helen?
I'm pretty sure that he would not know how to launder my clothes if he was worried that they would be taken as murder evidence. He'd be like, sorry, you're on their own. I've never known what this machine does. I got married in 1970. That's what she's for.
Oh my God.
Private eyes watching you, watching your every move. Baby, private eyes, Veronica Mars. Oh.